This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 309, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy members like you.
Well, it's Friday night at the football game. The crowd is cheering one more time for me. And everything is going fine so far. But life is just 10 yards away. A football play that goes on three. But when you don't know me and you don't see me, the ball.
Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 309. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hey, big guy.
And Josh Flanagan.
Are you going to sing a sea shanty?
Possibly at iFanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics every week. We read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one and writes about it on the website. We talk about it on the podcast and on the website, too. Whatever. Well, there's a lot of books this week. We're going to talk about some of them, or all of them, or a few of them. You can decide after the show. Before we get to the show, though, quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show. We'll be talking about spoilers and plot points, especially for the pick of the week. So if you don't want to know what happened, pause the show and come back later. You'll be happier. Happier life is a longer life.
Is there a gas
leak? I don't have the pick this week, but Josh does.
Is he okay? Fine. Pick of the week this week was Fear Agent number 32, the last of a series. This has been one of my favorite series, full stop, you know, since I read it for the first time. And I know you guys are pretty big fans, too.
I gave you the trade paperback.
It was it's one of the few universally loved books by all of us.
Yeah. However, you know, it struggled a little bit, I think, in the market. I don't think that a ton of people have read it, which is confounding to me.
DC is a superhero book.
No, yeah. It is not. But at the same time, you know, you got Remender, who writes one of the biggest books over at Marvel with Uncanny X-Force, hugely popular, with Jerome Opeña, an artist who came up on Fear Agent. And it's very perplexing. That's the thing is, when I think about this book, it's very perplexing to me. But it was time to end the book, and they decided to take it out and have it in sort of one big story of this saga of an Earth sort of destroyed and the Tataldans and the Dressites and these aliens and this just big, I just call it big space adventure with this sort of this hero, this anti-hero of Heath Houston, who's this sad, lonely, can't get his shit together or can't get his wife back, and he drinks too much, but he also kicks ass at the same time. And
would you call him an anti-hero? I don't think that's
no, that isn't. That's
okay.
Wrong.
Okay. Move on. that kind of stuck in my craw.
Like, he's not the hero. Like, he's not standing up with his chest pumped out. Like, let's all do
this. I think he's very much
a hero. He's a flawed
hero.
Yeah, sure. That'll work.
Yeah.
You know, at the basis of it, it's a really, really well done book that is about big aliens that are very strange and a guy in a fishbowl space hat and an orange suit and a rocket shaped rocket.
Space hat?
Space hat.
Space cat.
So is that what this is going to be this week?
Sorry.
Because I can parse the shit out of your language if you want me to, because we'd be here all day.
I just like the idea of a space hat.
It's a fishbowl shaped space hat. Listen, that should be on a cover. thrills with a fishbowl-shaped space hat. And, you know, like, we've been around this ride for the whole time. It's gone through all sorts of genres. There's been, you know, touches of that space adventure is always there. But there's been Western, and there's been war, and there's been, hell, there's been slice of life in the sort of this last arc. And it's been a really good ride. It's been a little bumpy because of there's been a lot of delays in sort of getting this last bit out because, frankly, everybody's got other work they have to do that pays, you know, the bills, I think. And also there was some sort of scheduling thing with Dark Horse. But all that aside, you know, at the end of the day, I thought this was a really strong ending, mostly for the character Heath Houston. And I really liked how it ended up. And I felt really satisfied having read the whole thing. One of the really cool things is that there's been this sort of rotating cast of artists. It was Tony Moore, who was the co-creator, and he switched off with Jerome Pena, and they're both wonderful artists. And then they both, you know, had other stuff to do and had work. And so this last bit was filled in by basically – it was like a collaboration of Tony Moore along with Mike Hawthorne and then John Lucas on inks. And the cool thing about it was that it really fit right in with everything that had come before. It wasn't exactly Tony Moore, but like that feel of the original sort of look of Fear Agent was completely intact, and I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, there's never been a gap in continuity in terms of the look and feel, even between Opeña and Moore, even though they're slight, you know, they have very different styles and different types. I mean, you always knew that you were reading Fear Agent, there was a great continuity in terms of the look and feel of the universe that the stories were told in.
Mm-hmm. At the end of it, I was just like, "Well, that was a good ending." Like, and I love a good ending.
Well, that was what got me as well. I mean, like, and if you went to ifanboy.com on Wednesday, there was a whole lot of yellow on the page, on the home page.
Cause, it was.
And I'd written an advance review of it, and Josh wrote the pick of the week review of it, and the end of a book is always it's sad, you know what I mean? Especially a book that's beloved. You know, I think we recall my heartbrokenness over the end of Strangers in Paradise and things like that, and I loved what Remender did with the story in terms of that he figured out a way to make it work and to give Heath what he wanted, but
not.
But not. Yeah, exactly. And I thought it played to the tragedy of Fear Agent throughout the whole run of this series so perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it, like his smile at the end that kept growing as you go through those last 4 or 5 pages. Like his face just sort of gets brighter, and everybody's like, ah, you know, he's watching that rinky-dink weird monitor, which is very strange. And
those who didn't read it or whatever, what happened was is that, you know, the whole story of Fear Agent has been Heath Houston fighting these aliens. You know, who, you know, that's been the whole basis of it. And he finally figured out, he finally was able to outsmart them and figure out a way to beat them. And it involved lots of time travel and alternate dimension travel, which I thought was great. That one sequence where he was going through the rocket ship was punching through the different dimensions, and you know, him and the robot version of his girl were fighting, and they were changing every time. Like, I thought that was neat. And ultimately, you know, far in the future, figured out a way to go, you know, to save the world, to save everything, and gets to go back in time and from space watch himself and his family and his kid and his father all kind of live together and see
happily,
yeah, and see the effect of his work in preventing the disasters that happened throughout Fear, kind of almost Star Trek-y in the Star Trek reboot kind of way, you know, where like the you know a different timeline and that sort of thing, and you know, and then he just literally rides off into the sunset. I thought was great.
Literally,
literally flies into the sun.
But yeah,
crying, drinking a bottle of Jack.
That last. The cover on this is so far it might be my favorite cover I've seen this year. I just because it just says everything about what this is. You know, it's part of the story, but it's just this sort of striking visual.
Yeah,
it's hard to talk about this issue, which was a great issue, without sort of just thinking of it as a whole thing. Because when a great ending issue comes along and caps a whole series, like it just everything sort of flows together, and you start thinking about all the things that you liked about it. But It was a really fun issue. Besides, you know, even the first half, which I tended to gloss over a little bit, which is this really odd fight between this woman who was his wife, but now she's basically half killer robot, and it's crushing. It's kind of awful. But then you've got his rocket, who is a female with an AI,
which
and
I
they
was
get
great
along.
That the role she played in that was fantastic. Yep. And then
So they kind of got to be together a little bit at the end, and it's just there's a billion ideas here, and that's what I've always liked about it. And it's fun, and it's sappy, and it's a little silly at times, but it's like sort of overly serious, but it just does all of these things right. And it's one of the best comic books that I've read, you know, in the last decade.
And I think the testament is the fact that the people involved in this now are doing some of the best-selling work elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Remender with Venom and with Uncanny X-Force and work with Opania and Tony Moore, continuing, you know, like now like these artists now are hot commodities. And I think also if you go back and read the first Fear Agent trade or first issues compared to this, you just see how far Remender's come as a writer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially with the Samuel Clemens quotes and in this and all that, like the positioning and just like it's just really well done. It reminded me a lot of the end of Why the Last Man, kind of like this big journey that we were on and now it's over and mm-hmm. done very classily and with grace. And I couldn't think of a better way to end it.
Yeah. It's true. I read a lot of really good issues this week. But, you know, if you're going to talk about one that felt the most significant, the most sort of well done, over and over, it's really hard to stick a landing. We've seen this in comics all the time. People aren't used to it, for one thing.
Yeah.
They're just used to leading into whatever the next thing is. And it was, this landing was stuck. And, you know, originally there was like, well, this will end this story of Fear Agent, but there could be like, this is feels like an ending. And I'm fine with that. I don't need it to be.
More than fine with it. Yeah, I think
yes.
It's great. Yeah.
I'm fine with the drawing. And you're right. Like, this book was like a talent, you know, like a talent scout's dream.
Yeah.
For you know, what comics are going to be and who's going to be big, who are now big in comics.
Yeah. So it's with great sadness that we say that we bid adieu to Fear Agent. But the great thing is that the trades still exist. They're all except for the last trade are all in print. So go to Amazon, buy them. Experience Fear Agent, you know what I mean? Like, it's definitely one that we will continue to recommend to people, because if you're looking for good sci-fi genre pulpy kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and to see some of the work of creators that you're enjoying now in other books, you know, you've got no reason not to. Like, it's a guaranteed enjoyment. I don't think there's
and we've had lots of people say, you know, because I didn't read them in order to begin with. I've had people say, you can pick up one of the, you know, first, you know, three trades, or you can read any of them. You'd
yeah.
be all right. Then take it in order from there.
Yeah.
And there is supposedly an omnibus at some point.
Eventually. So I'm sure someday.
Eventually. Yeah, but I wouldn't hold my breath for it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Fear Agent might have ended, but Fear itself still rolls on.
Refuses.
No, Fear Agent 32.3 will be out in like 2 years.
Fear itself's like a monster in a horror movie. You just can't kill it.
So did either of you pick up Fear Itself 7.1?
No.
Well, I'm really torn with this because – so Fear Itself 7.1, I guess I'm the only one who picked it up. This is the one that focused on Captain America and was billed as, you know, the burying of Bucky or whatever and dealing with the death of Bucky. And as an issue – like, as a crafted, to take away all the crap of Fear Agent and stuff like that, it's a wonderful issue. It's Brubaker and Butch Geist doing what they do. And it looks great. It looks as good as any of the Captain America issues they worked on together. It's got the Kirby Buscema-esque, you know, Jaws, the 70s clothes. It's got, you know, everything that we loved about those issues, you know, a while back. Except for the fact that the entire contents of the comic are just basically rubbing your face in the mess of Fear Itself, which just kills me. So basically what happened was is that Bucky gets stabbed by Sin during Fear Itself, and before Cap and Iron Man, everybody can get to Bucky's body, Black Widow and Nick Fury swap it with an LMD and and fake Bucky's...
Damn those LMDs!
Fake Bucky's death. They give Bucky...
It was a dead LMD, so it was a DMD.
Yeah, true. Then they inject Bucky with the last of the Infinity formula to save him, and basically fake his death, and then right before the funeral, tell Cap, who gets pissed off and beats up Nick Fury, and then they bring Cap around to their side that Bucky works best in the shadows, and he's going to go back to being Winter Soldier, and this is what it is now, and it launches the Winter Soldier series that's going to be coming out in February.
I'm not sure what part of that I'm supposed to spoil or not talk about.
Well, we gave a spoiler warning.
I know.
Yeah.
Just there was a whole thing.
Yeah,
like the next day, here's the name of the title. Like, so
yeah,
people who did want to not be spoiled only had a small window to
read
it.
But I mean, that's the thing, is that as an issue, it was good, it was enjoyable. Like, I thought Geist's art was great. I thought all the as Brubaker put it on the Marvel press conference the other day, the fake out, like it was clear and it made sense. It just that it just cheapened everything about Bucky's death in Fear Itself was already cheap, and this just cheapened it even further.
Well, just ignore it. Make your own continuity.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
Forget about it happened. Everyone else is going to forget it happened.
Yeah. I mean, Brubaker said that his original plan, minus Fear Itself, was that at the end of the Gulag, story, Bucky in Russia, he was going to make it seem as if Bucky died and then go away for a few months and then come back as Winter Soldier. So he said that this was still his plan. It just, they worked it into Fear itself.
That would have been better.
Yes.
Wouldn't it have also been great, though, if like you were reading the Captain America book and the last page was just a panel of Winter Soldier?
Yeah.
I mean, without launching a book called Winter Soldier 3 months ahead of, I mean, I know that's how it has to work, and I understand how, but wouldn't that have been great?
Yeah. Who knows? this certainly wasn't great. I mean, that's a tough thing. That's why I'm torn with it, because it was a good comic book. It just sucked. You know, it just sucked.
It sucks. Is that sexting? Is that what the kids do now?
Sexting is the new thing. Sexting was the old thing. Sexting is the new thing. It's very, the kids move fast these days.
Yeah. These phones.
I can't be held responsible. No, just,
Image Comics had a hell of a week.
They did. They had a couple last week too. Like,
now, Our Love Is Real is sort of a reprint, but it's being distributed by Image Comics. It was an indie before by Sam Humphries and Steven Sanders. And now, Ron, you'd been talking about it for a while. You did a Talksplode with Sam Humphries at one point, and I had no idea what this book was. And I was like, well, I'll read it. You know, Ron seems to like it. That can go either way. But
go fuck yourself.
No. So I didn't have any idea what it was. I had no idea. And I looked at the cover and I thought, that's weird. It looks like that guy's having sex with a dog. And then I start reading it. And I was like, oh, he was having sex with a dog. But all that aside, I really enjoyed this story because it was just one of those little wacky sci-fi stories. And it felt to me, it reminded me very much of one of the side tales from Transmetropolitan. It felt very much like that world. Yep. And because of that, I enjoyed it. It was like a short story. It was really well drawn, and it was wacky and out there. And I've seen that it's not about having sex with animals. It's about like standards in society. It's a comment on those kind of things. And at the end of it, it's just sort of like a little one shot sci-fi love story. Yep. That's just a little wacky and out there. And it was really well done. It was really well drawn. Yeah. Steven
Wonderful
Sanders.
Art. Yeah.
Yeah. Great job.
And we actually, over if you go to ifanboy.com earlier last week, we had a great feature with some of Steve Sanders' concept art for the characters and the weapons and the ships, and along with Sam's commentary. So if you enjoyed Our Love Is Real, go back and check out that post, because it will make you enjoy it a little more.
But I really think that going into it, like having no preconception of what it was made it a really interesting sort of experience, which I'm guessing most people will if they bother to pick it up. It's like at the end, I don't know, it was like some really messed up like Twilight Zone episode or something. Like, it was just very...
Yeah, I love the science, and we talked about this before. I mean, I love the science fiction that exists in a clearly in the future, but in a recognizable future, or as a, you know, I wouldn't say it's near future because it's so far away from what we do in our standard stuff like that, but in a relatable context. And I think that's what made Transmetropolitan work so well. That's what made this work so well. The idea of, you know, people rioting for, you know, for their rights and things like that. It just happens to be this interesting spin on it in terms of sexuality. And
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that that's the thing, is that it should be accepted by everybody reading this. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a cop in a robot suit who beats up people who want to have sex with vegetables.
Yeah.
Because he thinks that you should do it the right way by having sex with your dog.
Yep.
And it doesn't make any sense. It's absurd, and that's the point.
Yep.
Of the absurdity. And then a whole other thing happens that's I don't even know what to make of it. I was just like, that was neat. It was real neat.
Yeah.
Pure sci-fi is hard to come by.
Yep.
In comics.
But it was.
You,
yeah.
You don't think it is, but it is. Actually is. Pure sci-fi that isn't superheroes in sci-fi or some of the spin on sci-fi. Pure actual sci-fi is not all that popular.
Yep.
And that's what this was.
Yep.
And that's why I liked it.
Cool. I'm glad you liked it. I mean, I do have decent taste, and I'm glad that you concurred.
That's what this is all about,
right? I concur. Stormwatch number 3, I thought, was the best issue so far of the series, and I think it's starting to gel.
Yep.
I think Paul Cornell's starting to figure it out, and this is, to me, seemed like the most, I don't want to say Stormwatchy or Authority-y, but...
But it was.
It was.
Yep.
The characters are coming together. There's a big action. There's crazy science stuff. So this would be science fiction within the superhero realm.
Right.
And I love that. I love the little touches of like when Jack Hawksmoore talks to the cities, they're actual people
that
representing.
That was awesome. That was really cool.
And then Apollo, sort of the unlikely hero, and Midnight. Now it's all up to Midnighter, who's, you know, Batman basically, and he has to take down this giant creature. So I think it started off kind of rocky. It was okay in the beginning, but I think now it's starting. Every issue has been getting better with Stormwatch.
Yeah. I agree. I just can't get over. I don't like the. It's the one spike on Midnighter's chin. It's that one costume element that just drives me crazy. I don't know why.
I you know what? I don't really like that costume, but yeah. I will say this was the time that he felt the most like the Midnighter I was used to.
Yeah.
And you know, it is easy to say that he's kind of a Batman, but he has a different attitude. Like, he's a little more self-effacing.
Oh, totally.
Like, yeah. Where he's just like, oh, now I have to fight this thing. And I like that slight bit of, it's not self-doubt as much as it's just a little bit of a dry, like a wryness, I guess, that he has, that I think that he really, that Cornell really nailed in this issue.
Yeah. I love how he wanted them to retreat, you know, because he can see the...
Yeah.
Oh, like, come on, guys, we got to retreat. No, seriously.
Midnighter is such a good character, and he has such a cool power that, you know, it doesn't seem all that different, but it's very unique. What a great team. Like, this is starting to turn into the book that I definitely want it to be, which I kind of had no doubt. I'm really glad.
Now I think all that's left is to figure out a need or a role for Martian Manhunter.
Yep.
Yeah,
right,
that's
now
true.
He's sort of extraneous. And actually, he was the part that was most interested. You know, putting him in that team seems kind of genius. I'm just waiting for a reason for it.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, somebody's got to talk. They got to talk telepathically, maybe. Yes. I don't know.
That's all he does. He goes from team to team, linking people telepathically.
Yeah. That's what he's a phone. It's basically
he's a Wi-Fi network.
He's Skype. Are you guys reading The Strange Talent of Luther Strode?
No.
Hypothetically, yes, but I didn't get to the issue that came out this week.
This book is great.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, no, I've got
No, it's really good. And Ron, you've gone on record like, oh, this is the best new book from Image right now. Right now, this is the best new book from Image.
And I've heard that as well, yeah.
The second issue was better than the first one. This is like kick-ass that doesn't make me feel stupid.
Yeah.
I really, really dug it. And then beyond that, the artist, Trad Moore, we put up a sketch that he did of Fin Fang Foom on the Weekly SketchUp this past week. It is fantastic. He's really good.
You know,
it was one of those times where I'm looking at the artwork. I'm like, this guy's going to be somebody. Like, he's going to be a big deal. There's a lot of Ryan Ottley in it, which I didn't see so much in the first issue, but now I start to see it. And I think we're going to see a lot more from him. But it's a mini series, and I really think people need to go pick it up.
Yeah, I'm going to go buy it on Graphically right now.
You can do that. You can go buy it right now. Just a wonderful story of, like, it's a little bit of the Spider-Man, a little bit of the Kick-Ass, where, like, a kid in a high school is just, you know, an everyday loser kid, you know, becomes very, very strong and very powerful and, you know, beats up the bully and girls start to like him, but there's something else going on underneath and there's a robbery and he helps prevent it, but he's got this barely contained power. And that's the difference between this and Kick-Ass, is that Kick-Ass had no power and got beat up a lot. This guy is sort of this raw, untapped power. We don't know what it's about or you know, how much there is there. Highly recommended. Really like
it. The X-Men Regenesis train keeps rolling, and this week Kieran Gillen and Carlos Pacheco follow Jason Aaron and Chris Bocciolo after Wolverine and the X-Men number one last week that we all raved about with Uncanny X-Men number one. And it was interesting because, you know, talk about a tough act to follow. And and the discussion was, okay, well, what direction are they going to take Uncanny in? And I was somewhat, you know, I was relieved and unsurprised, because I kind of called it, that they would take it in this direction, which is much more action-based, much more, and I say adult, not in a, you know, not in a salacious kind of way, but in a more, you know, like, whereas, like, I guess what it all sums up is that if in the back matter, in Wolverine X-Men, the back matter from Jason Aaron was a very jokey class schedule of what's going on at the school. And the back matter of this was a letter to humanity from Cyclops to the world about what the X-Men will be and how they're going to be a deterrent and how they're not going to live in fear anymore or be victims, and that they're here to protect people and be superheroes, but also they're you know, not going to, you know, suffer the intolerance of towards mutants and stuff like that. Two very different tones. Very different tones.
I think the most disappointing thing about this book was that it didn't really go anywhere new. It felt like more a continuation of what had been happening before, Wolverine
was
different. Wolverine felt like a new start, a new beginning for the X-Men, a very accessible X-Men era, whereas this was probably not very accessible to people who haven't been reading X-Men before.
Yeah,
so in that sense, it was disappointing. Like, I'm sure X-Men fans loved it, but for me, coming off of Wolverine and the X-Men, I was looking forward to another sort of new rebirth of the X-Men on this side and being able to jump in on something new. But this felt like the things I've been sampling for the last couple of years.
Yeah,
X-Men.
Given the Utopia location and the people involved and stuff like that, I do see that, and that's a good observation. What I did get from this issue, which I didn't ever since the X-Men moved to Utopia, was a sense of focus and a sense of organization and a sense of, okay, this is what we're doing. Because I feel as if ever since they did the Utopia thing, they've just been wavering. They've just been like, how are we going to make this work? Are we going to be okay? Can we do this? You know, like, and it's never been a settled, this is our home, this is what we're doing. And now, and at least for me, and admittedly I'm a long-term X-Men fan, but with the way Gillen had Cyclops lay out who the team was, what their roles are, who the other people on Utopia are and what their roles are going to be, I got a sense of focus. And then they just got into the action with Sinister as the villain. And I got to give Gillen credit for two things. One, finally addressing that big celestial in the middle of Golden Gate Park that's been there for years.
I was like, oh, it's still there.
Yeah. And then two, in all this world of sexy time over at DC and violence and rape and all these other things happening in comics and all these other crazy things, stuff like that, to end the first issue of Uncanny X-Men with Mr. Sinister in front of a carousel, I thought it was a little ballsy. So kind of a wacky different direction to take it.
Now, Josh, were you feeling any pressure to make this the third X-Men pick in the row?
I can't say that I was.
Did you read it?
No.
You said you were going to read it.
Through
you
it.
Lied.
Liar.
I forgot about it.
Yeah.
You forgot you.
I'm looking through it right now, and I, you know, it's funny. Just looking through it and just sort of browsing, it feels like a classic X-Men book that I didn't get into.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean it looks and feels like I've read a little Mr. Sinister. I don't get that shit at all.
Yeah.
It's never been my thing. But I am curious about Colossus in this.
Yeah, that is a curious, interesting thing. Connor, by any chance, did you pick up New Mutants number 33?
No.
Okay, now in terms of starting off on a new kind of chapter and a new kind of jumping in, New Mutants number 33 is the quiet kind of dark horse of all this Regenesis stuff, if you ask me. Basically, it's Danny Moonstar, Warlock, Sunspot, Cypher, Magma, and X-Man, Nate Gray. And they decide to move off of – they've sided with Cyclops, but they've decided to move off of Utopia, and they got an apartment in the Mission in San Francisco. And this whole issue was about that decision-making process and them gelling as a team. Who from the team decided to go with Wolverine, like Paige and Cannonball? The Guthries went over with Wolverine and why. But then this kind of establishes this New Mutants team and their role within the Cyclops team and the fact that they're going to kind of break away but still be a part of it. And this was, you know, it's Abnett Lanning writing it, and it's David Lopez on art. And this was like the end of the issue. I was like, damn, that was good. Like, it was really good. Like, it gelled.
Other than Cyclops and Wolverine, I have no idea what you just said.
Okay.
Now, how would you rank those three books then, in terms of enjoyability?
What do you mean?
Like you've had basically three new starts.
Yep.
At this point, so how where would you put them?
Oh, I've enjoyed them all.
If you had to rank them.
Rank them on what? Based on what?
Which ones you thought were the best?
I thought they were all great. Like, well, no, I mean,
speaking of carousels,
no, I just thought they were all great. I mean, they were all great for different reasons. I mean, you'd probably give a slight edge to Wolverine and the X-Men because it was the newest and the freshest and most unexpected. But at this point, I'm yet to be disappointed by any Regenesis title. You know,
okay.
Like, there's just so much energy and fresh kind of approach to the X-Men books now. I can't wait for the rest of them to roll out. I'm so excited.
So what you're saying is it's Halloween. You got in front of you got a fun size Milky Way, you got a fun size Twix, and a single Reese's peanut butter. You're gonna say you like one more than the other. I don't even know which one.
Josh, I think you know me well enough that I can fit all three of those in my mouth. Right. I mean, let's call
metaphor.
A spade. I mean, you know, we've known each other for what, 15 years now. You've seen
would you
me
do
eat.
That?
You've seen
it
me eat much more.
Yeah, but wow, that's like the most apt metaphor I've ever experienced. Like, I thought I was like, I'm doing pretty well, and then you just were like, hold on, I'll take that for you. And then you just ran that shit into the end zone. That's football.
Or into my mouth.
Yeah, that's what I call the end zone. But we'll go to restaurants, and I'll say, hey, so what's heading towards the end zone? And you'd be like, all of this.
Steak, bitch.
Ribs.
And you'd be like, second burger. Straight to the end zone.
Well, you order a burger and there you go.
I don't know if that shake's big enough. I might need another shake. I'm like, that shake's $6. He goes, end zone's looking empty, buddy.
I did get two shakes at Shake Shack, didn't I?
Yes.
We don't talk about it. There you go.
We're almost witnessing a murder.
God. Can we? It was a little hard not to make Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes number one pick of the week.
I was surprised. I thought that would be your front runner.
I really liked them both a lot. If one was a Twix and one was a Three Musketeers, I would shove them both in my own end zone. But as a sort of start of just a classic, getting the feeling right of the original Planet of the Apes, dare I say the real Planet of the Apes? I don't want to do that. Karina Bechko and Gabe Hardman delivered an issue that I was 100% happy with and then some.
Here's the thing. They love Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, that's clear.
And, And you can see, even if you read the book, just look through the pages. Look at the art. It's an energized Gabriel Hartman art you haven't seen maybe up to this point.
He's so good.
He loves Planet of the Apes. If you talk to him for 5 minutes, you find that out. But this is a passion project for the two of them, and this is coming through in every page.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, you can look at it and go, oh, it's a licensed book. It's not that.
No,
it's way more than just that. And it was a really good story. It was like a fun story of this, you know. I haven't seen the movie in so long, I couldn't even tell you exactly what it was. I know Dr. Zaius existed in both. But, you know, the sort of general who's become a lawyer and, the, you know, humans and as pets and just sort
the things
of,
you don't have to have a knowledge of Planet of the Apes movies or be some sort of super fan.
It's so simple that anybody could pick it up and enjoy it. This is sci-fi. You know, this is pretty much, you know, straight up sci-fi as well. And it's gorgeous. It's wonderful. It's fun. It's well thought out. It's just sort of a little burst of wonderful.
Great stuff. Another little burst of wonderful is Digital Comics, straight on your computer or your phone or your tablet device. And you can
from
get
your tablet to your end zone.
Exactly. You can get that all from Graphically. iFanboy is part of the Graphically family, and we are very excited this past week as we announced that we've added the double feature application that was developed by our friends over at 4-Star Studios to Graphically. So now Josh Emmons, who was the main guy behind the double feature app, has joined Team Graphically, and you're going to be able to get all the 4-Star Studios double feature content on Graphically on the web, on Android, on iOS, as well as through the double feature app. The double feature app's not going anywhere.
Karina Bechko and Gabe Hardman did a story for Double Feature called The Liar.
Exactly. So we want to welcome them and urge everybody to go check out the Double Feature app in iTunes. And if you want to see what the Double Feature app begat, you can go to the Apple newsstand on your iPad and you subscribe to Invincible, Savage Dragon, Walking Dead, Near Death, Morning Glories, Irredeemable. And that was all done using technology based off the acquisition of Double Feature. So it's pretty cool stuff. But that's not all Graphly's got. Graphly's got over 5,000 comics available from over 250 publishers, including Marvel, Image Comics, Boom Studios, Archaea, great stuff, Dynamite, you know, pretty much a lot. There's a lot of good stuff on there. And you can get it on your desktop, on the web, on your phone, your iPhone or your Android phone, or your iPad or a tablet. If you've got a Barnes & Noble Nook, or if you're looking at getting the new Barnes & Noble Nook, which is coming out, being announced next week, I think, as well as the Amazon Kindle Fire, which is coming out soon, Graphly is going to have comics available there. So we're doing everything that we can to get really great comics in your hands. So go to graphly.com. Don't miss a thing. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/graphically.
More big stuff coming up, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Know
yeah.
that much.
Yeah. Yeah, you do know that.
I do.
So talk about sticking the landing. Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man number 673. Woo!
Some sexy problems in the end zone.
This is the epilogue. Connor, am I the only one reading this? Or?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't really remember why I chose to include this. It was good. They stuck the land. Oh, I remember. Carly found out Spider-Man's identity and broke up with him.
That's why you never reveal it.
And the byproduct of when Spider-Man said, "Hey, I'm Peter Parker and I've got spider powers," and let everybody remember that great moment. Well, apparently that undid Doctor Strange's spell. And so now everybody in the Marvel Universe can find out that he's Spider-Man again. So the secret identity is back on the table. So we got that going for us. But yeah, they totally stuck the landing, and there was a great moment at the end with Spidey and Mary Jane, and there was a great touching moment where the city thanked Spider-Man, the Empire State Building lit up red and blue, and it was really kind of cool. It was very New York. It was neat. But good job to the Spider-Man creative team for nailing this whole event.
Invincible number 84 was a different kind of book. We've seen Mark sort of going through this change, and we've seen that there is a different Invincible in our futures somewhere. And I just it's the same thing I've always liked about Invincible. 84 issues, by the way.
Yep.
I just marvel at that. No pun intended. Basically, Mark is going through a crisis of consciousness. Why am I flying around punching everything? Is it doing any good? Which is, by the way, the question that you would ask of any of the Justice Leaguers if you had them in real life. Like, right. What have you accomplished? What have
you changed? I thought it was more so that when they saw – so the big whole thing was Vegas was destroyed, and
right.
then they took the dinosaurus's idea and made this massive solar energy thing, and now they're providing energy for the for half the country.
Yeah.
And Invincible – that great two-page panel of a close-up of Invincible's head when he realizes is that Dinosaurus was right, you know, and while he doesn't...
By the way, the fact that he's called Dinosaurus, but he's also an eco-terrorist who was right.
Yeah.
It's just a melange of ideas I love.
So, you know, so Invincible deciding to team up with Dinosaurus and you know, steer him in a more productive direction, but it makes him a fugitive in Cecil's eyes, but I thought it was a great turn. It was really interesting. Good issue.
Another great issue. Yep. Otley really doing a great job on it too. Sort of on a quiet issue.
Yep, doing good.
Six Guns number one, or as I call it, a little bit of Losers and a little bit of Sons of Anarchy. Andy Diggle has taken all these Western characters from Marvel and updated them with David Gianfelice. And I thought this was a Western, but it's not a Western. And I bought it because I thought it was a Western, and now it's not. Like, it was
very confusing.
See what I'm getting at? Like, yeah. I was like, I guess I should buy it because what if it is really good? And then I'd be like not supporting Western comics, which I want to.
See, but I looked at the cover. You're not going to fool me again. From Marvel.
Yeah, that's kind of where I netted out. It wasn't bad, but I was good enough with the Losers, and I'm fine with that. And this felt a little like that. Really good looking art, I got to say. I thought it was a really great looking book. And it was solid. It was well done. But I didn't think it brought too much to the table. I do wish it was actually a Western. But then I understand they need to sell books. So there's that. Last of the Greats number two, I thought was much stronger than Last of the Greats number one. Not that there was much wrong with the other one, but it was just a little more clear idea of where we are in this world. And it's a Superman who's a jerk, basically, and holds the whole world at bay.
But there's
it's a little different than that because there's a whole PR angle going on. There's definitely touches of Irredeemable. The guy, he drops a baby in the ocean, or a kid in sharks. Like it wouldn't have been bad enough to just drop him in the ocean, but he dropped him among sharks. But I really enjoyed like sort of the mind play that's going on, and the sort of leader of the humans and his public face versus what he has to, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, and this sort of a little bit of a media or PR sort of story going on in the back of this. But also really good looking book too. It's a good second step.
So continuing the Image love, big ups to Savage Dragon number 175 to Eric Larson for getting to 175 issues on his creator on title, and just total fun. I wrote a review of it earlier last week. You can go check that out. First off, the first page is beautiful, like a close-up of Savage Dragon that shows Larson really can. Then you turn the second page, and there's this huge double-page spread of a spaceship in space. It's all Kirby dotted and all that fun stuff. But the highlight for this for me is he brought back Savage Dragon. We thought, you know, he's dead, but we find out that he's actually been revived. And there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's a 15-panel page where Dark Lord and Savage Dragon are talking, and Dark Lord's explaining what happened and talking about time travel and saying, well, Tuesday Dark Lord then went to Thursday Dark Lord and talked to Tuesday Dragon. Just insane craziness that only Larson can do, and was just fantastic. So I love it. So now the Dragon's back. It's going to be really interesting to see where he takes it from here.
Heart number one hit the stands. I feel like we've been talking about this book for a while. This is Blair Butler and Kevin Mellon's book from Image Comics. It's just all Image. That's all we're talking about from now on. It's about mixed martial arts and sort of the story of the little guy who's working at a crappy desk job and wants to go fight and finds out he's pretty good at it. And this is sort of the beginning of his tale. And I thought, you know, we've seen a lot of stuff that came from people who are, in the media. And Blair definitely gets a sort of head start by being a known personality. But I it's clear that her heart was in this. I'm sorry. And I thought it was a pretty good start. I mean, it will break down any doors or anything, but I enjoyed it. And because I've never read about this world, I don't know anything about it. And I thought that Kevin Mellon's art was really appropriate for it. Although it was a little rough looking, but I thought that fit.
Yeah. I thought the art was a little lacking for me. That's all. I thought it was a little sketchier, unfinished than I would have expected.
I took that as an intention. That's how I suppose, because it did fit in that way. Like, this world has rough edges, and I feel like it smells bad, and it's just
Kansas, I get that,
City.
But
for me, that worked.
Yeah, and the main character looks a lot like Dokken. He does.
Yes.
He does. He's a Mohawk, the tribal tattoo. Like, I opened that page, and I was like, oh, so Dokken's in this book. Is that legal?
Does Dokken just look like an MMA guy, maybe? I don't know. Anyway,
Dawkins, Dark Wolverine's kid, you know? Whatever.
At this rate, the vacation of Infinite Vacation will be infinite. Thank you. The third
is
issue.
Is it worth
out.
The wait? That's
no,
the question.
I no longer like this book.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. I was wavering. I liked the second issue quite a bit. I didn't really like the first issue, but with this third issue, I was like, ugh, why did I wait 6 months for...
Yep.
Just it seemed like sensationalism.
The thing is that this is the problem. You can't think that, you know, like, oh, they'll just wait. Like, you'll get tired. Like, waiting is not fun. You know, you get interested in a book and you get some momentum. You want to read it, you know? So,
but even that, I came back to a chapter I didn't care for at all.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
is it the devil? Was that what did it?
It seems sensationalistic for no apparent reason. Then there was a whole bunch of heady text at the end.
Yeah.
It just, I went from just horrific violence to 4 to 5, 6 pages, 7 pages, 8 pages of talking about dimensions and the singularity. And I was just like, I wasn't, not what I was looking for.
Yeah. Oh, well. So those are the books that we read this week. Go to ifanboy.com/comics and you can see all the books that came out and you can do your pull list and come back and you can rate them and review them and make your picks of the week. And we're going to run through the top 5 picks of the week from the iFanboy community. And coming in at number 5 was Amazing Spider-Man, number 673 with 9.4% of the pick of the week percentages. Number 4, astonishingly, was Fear Itself, number 7.1 with 10.5% of the pick of the week percentages. And it was a good comic.
People really liked it.
Yeah.
They liked it.
Yeah. Number 3 was Animal Man, number 3, with 11.4% of the pick week percentages. Decimal points separating the 5, 4, and 3 spots. Fascinating. Number 2 was Josh's pick of the week, Fury Agent, number 32, came in at 13.8% of the pick of the week percentages. It was good to see that rank so high. But the number 1 pick of the week for the iFanboy community was, seems as if Scott Snyder is just sending out lots of checks out to the iFan base. Swamp Thing number 3 got 29.6% of the pick of the week percentages, and it was a good issue. I'm really enjoying Swamp Things.
Ben knows how to work our community. That's what I know.
He does. He does. He's a good guy.
He does. And he keeps putting out the books.
Yes.
Rex Dude said of Animal Man number 3, gave the story a 4 out of 5, the art a 3 out of 5. Like we said, it's 11.4% of the pick of the week percentage. And he said, the first 2 issues didn't wow me. In fact, I told myself that if issue number 3 didn't impress, I was dropping the book. I can now say that I'll be back for number 4. Where to begin? Travel Foreman's art finally delivers for me. His grotesque depictions of Buddy Baker traveling through the Red and the Hunters 3, disgusting creatures all literally crawling out of their skins, made this horror title everyone said it was supposed to be. And Jeff Lemire has ratcheted up the tension now where I'm actually looking forward to the next issue. All in all, this book is my pick of the week because, contrary to popular belief, sometimes it's nice to be wrong about something.
Travel Foreman was the star of this issue.
This is amazing. It's fantastic.
I mean, it was unsettling. It was creepy. Lemire's writing a great story, but for me, the story of this particular issue was Travel Foreman's art, which was all over the place.
And it's all the facial expressions. I mean, I know in the best of the panels you highlighted that when the mullet kid is trying to play video games, but for me, that panel wasn't so much the weird things attacking him, but it was Buddy's wife watching it happen at her drawing board. Like, I was like, oh, wow, look at that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, God. So good. So good. Love it.
Definitely.
Robot Zombie reviewed Witch Doctor number 4 and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and 0.4% of the iFan base made it their pick of the week. And Robot Zombie says, if you are not reading this series, you are missing a fantastic comic. Demons, monsters, and the supernatural are of the sickness of the universe, and Dr. Morrow is on call with a mixture of medicine and magic and a truly terrible bedside manner to save the day. A terrific blend of horror, humor, and Dr. House.
Yeah, this was the end of the first arc. They're going to roll these out Hellboy style. And it was just as fun as the first one. It's rollicking and sort of crazy and has a sense of humor. And another book from Image Comics this week.
Yeah, strong.
They had a huge week.
Strong. But it was a
really fun miniseries it delivered, I thought.
So go to ifanboy.com/comics and do your pull list and write your reviews and maybe we get one on the show. It's always good to hear what everybody thinks. But it's also good to hear from everybody in the iFan base. And so we're going to read a couple emails. Our first one comes from Evan L. from Boston, Massachusetts, who says, I'm curious to know where you think the current remaining Vertigo offerings stand, both as a line and individually on an all-time best Vertigo list. Do you feel the line, although dwindling, is strong? Do we have a Sandman, with apologies to Ron, Preacher, Why the Last Man, or Swamp Thing right now? Or are there just a lot of very, very solid second-tier books? Disclaimer, I buy 6 Vertigo books in Scalp, Fables, American Vampire, Unwritten, Sweet Tooth, and Hellblazer, and I feel like I can make a case for 2, possibly 3 of those eventually making this list. Ah, Vertigo.
It's a valid question.
I've
been thinking about it lately because, you know, with the DC relaunch.
Have you been thinking about it?
I have been.
People, how many hours a day would you say you devote to?
I've been really thinking about Vertigo.
Like 2. 2 a day. That doesn't sound like a lot, but it adds up.
God, I love that.
I have been. And because DC didn't seem to be paying a lot of attention to them. And we're seeing a lot of series end. We're seeing Scalped end, DMZ's ending, Northlanders is ending.
Yep.
And you start to think, well, geez, what's left? And there's still Fables, which
Fables, I don't read Fables, but from what I've heard, you know, it's not like it should have ended at 75. That's what the word on the street is.
It was enjoyable after that. But the thing is, I think it's the thing, like it can go on as long as they want because people will keep buying it.
Yeah.
And it's not bad. It's just not new anymore.
Well, the thing is that I think, you know, American Vampire and Unwritten, those are the 2 heavy hitters right now.
Well, I don't see that Unwritten. I don't know what the sales are like, but I feel like the people who are reading it really like Unwritten, and they should. The last one was great. but I don't feel like it's getting out of that circle very much, which is sort of the Mike Carey thing.
Yep.
American Vampire is probably the best thing they've got going right now.
Well, and then – but then you've also – they recently launched Spaceman, which we talked about last week with Azzarello and Russo.
But that's just 9 issues.
Paul Cornell has
a new series coming out. I believe – wasn't the announcement in New York that there's going to be a new series every month next year from Vertigo?
Something like that.
Yeah, so like it sounds like DC spent the majority of this year focused on the DCU. Mm-hmm. And then it sounds like now the Eye of Mordor is starting to turn more towards Vertigo.
Kevin Berger, you have been seen.
And that's the thing, people got to understand. I mean, like, I know we speculated and I don't know why I said that people got to understand. It's like I feel like Kevin Bacon and JFK. People got to know. No, but
Mr. Gasson,
that's a fine looking end zone.
we speculated a lot about Vertigo, and we wondered, you know, with canceling titles and with laying off editors and with, you know, the focus on the DCU, whether or not Vertigo, and with not making the books available digitally and stuff like that, we thought, you know, Vertigo days were numbered. I believe on the podcast, like maybe 4 months ago, we were saying, yeah, Vertigo is going to go away. I point blank asked a high-level executive at DC, is Vertigo going to go away? And he said, absolutely not. He said, the focus has been on the superheroes. Vertigo is going to come back strong next year. So I don't think that it's as wavering as everybody thinks it will be. Whether or not it's successful, it's another story. Why can't I say SX sounds today?
Trouble. Although, on the other hand, I don't know that they're even as good as American Vampires. I don't know that there is a Preacher-level book, a Sandman, of Why the Last Man or Swamp Thing right now. Right.
Yeah, but those things come along. You can't expect them when they come
no,
along.
But is there a true flagship? I think there's Fables fans, there's American Vampire fans, there's...
Right now, you know. I think it's Fables and American Vampire sort of sharing that flag.
And whether one of those is going to turn Fables into is on the downturn and American Vampire...
Aren't you going to drop Fables, Josh?
I've been thinking about it. I'm a little less than interested in it lately. Oh, and also, you know,
Sweet Tooth. It took us 5 years.
Finally, we just keep that. I know. We let it sit for a while.
More than 5 years. You know, but the books that they're putting out are excellent. You know, like Sweet Tooth has been really good. We haven't really been talking about it very much.
Although I get the sense that Lemire's ready to wrap that up.
Yeah. Hellblazer's been really excellent.
Oh, Hellblazer. Hellblazer.
Yeah, but that doesn't sell for shit.
Yeah.
It's been great. Don't get me wrong.
It's like a legacy book almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it'll go forever probably because of – as long as it's a Vertigo, that'll be going and that'll make some of us very happy but not very many of us because there aren't that many.
Well, I don't think he's asking – we're not answering his questions. Though. He said – where do we think the current remaining Vertigo offerings stand both as a line and as the all-time best Vertigo list? Oh, yeah. Well, so clearly there's no Sandman. There's no Preacher. There's no Why the Last Man or Swamp Thing right now. Fables is the
Swamp
closest.
Swamp Thing was not a Vertigo book.
Right. Fables is the closest. American Vampire probably is right behind
that. Well, Swamp Thing's been grandfathered in when it reprints have Vertigo stamped on them.
Yeah. There you go. All right.
Joshua Sprock from Boys Ranch, Texas. I didn't know that was a real place. I love that. That was a Kirby and Simon book.
Boys Ranch, Texas?
Yep. Not Texas, just Boys Ranch.
I'm surprised Boys Ranch is in Texas. California.
Frederick Wortham did something with that.
I thought that was a neighborhood California? In my town.
Yeah. Is that a neighborhood in Ron's town?
Yeah. I was like, on Long Island? Oh, wait. Oh, I see. Boys Ranch, Texas. I was wondering what criteria you guys use to rate books. How do you differentiate between a 5-star book and a 4-star book, 2 or 3-star book? What's more important to your star rating, story or art?
Good question.
I think this is – I bet this is a different answer for everybody.
Yep. All right.
I think.
All right. So why don't you lead us off?
I do grade on a bit of a curve. In a given week, you know, like maybe something that's a 5-star book in 1 week is just the thing I liked. I really liked it this week. Or something that's exemplary about it. It was like when I put the book down, I'm like, I enjoyed that a lot. It was something really great about it. 4-star books are books that are good. They're pretty good, but weren't necessarily, exemplary. There wasn't something about them that jumped out that I'm going to remember, but they were, you know, really well done in all ways. 3 stars was just, it was a book. It was an average. It wasn't bad. It wasn't offensive. It didn't really excite me one way or another, but I couldn't really think of what's wrong with it. Two, there was stuff that was wrong with it. I didn't really like it. And then 1 star is Century Fallen Sun.
Connor,
that's how I look at it.
Oh wait, Josh, how important is story and art? Like, how are you?
They have to work together.
Yeah,
like you have to have.
I don't think you can differentiate them.
Yeah,
no, not in comics. I don't think so.
Although, yeah. if I don't like a story and I do like the art, I'll often bump it up on a star if I really like the art, or vice versa. Anyway,
yeah, I mean,
I think that sometimes there's too much stock put in the star rating. You know, people really obsess over the star. Like, sometimes I'll just rate things like Homer working at the plant. He's like, 5-star, 4-star, 5-star, 3-star. But I tend to use this the Netflix rating. Like, loved it, liked it. You know, yeah. I loved it, liked it a lot, didn't like it, hated it. That's pretty much my 5-star system.
Ratings. We'll see you next week. my approach is I don't grade on a curve like Josh says. I think that's kind of horseshit. I think if a book's 5-star this week, it's got to be 5-star next week and the week before that sort of thing. I don't grade in response to the other books that came out that week.
I don't know if I do that, but I think that there's some weeks where I don't know.
Yeah, look, everyone's rating system is their own. That's
it horseshit.
Well, you said that like this book would be a 5-star book if it came out last week.
Have another shake,
yeah. Fatty. But my approach is mainly around excitement level, where it's like if I'm a book knocked me off my socks, then it's a 5. If I enjoyed it, but there wasn't really anything to take away from it, but it didn't, you know, I didn't want to run to the streets and tell everyone about it, then it's a 4. 3, again, like similar how Josh said, non-offensive. And then 2 and 1, you know, kind of on the negative side of it. I find I give way more 4s than any other number.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we know to not buy books that are very bad, so we tend to be stuck in that area.
Yeah, every now and then we're surprised, though. So, what's interesting is that I like looking at the average rating for the community versus what I'm picking, because I think that's really interesting, because like that happened this week where there are a lot of books that I had rated 3s that the community rated like 4s and higher, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like
the average when you put in all of those hundreds of people, you know, picking their books, is usually pretty spot on. Yeah. I find when it's sort of as a range of overall quality. See, like, it's tough because like Jaws is a 5-star movie.
Yeah.
It's a 6-star movie.
Yeah. But like Reign of Fire, what do you call that?
It's also a 6-star movie.
But for different reasons.
Yes. I would absolutely give Reign of Fire 5 stars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, because I enjoy it as much as any other movie I'll watch.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's the best written acting movie of all time. No, but I enjoy it. There's different. The thing is, you can't compare everything.
Yep.
You like things for different reasons.
That's,
you know, sometimes you like it for the technical prowess of the book. Sometimes you like it because you enjoy it. Sometimes you like it because, you know, nostalgia. There's all kinds of different reasons to enjoy or just not enjoy something.
All right.
6 stars, motherfucker.
If you have any questions or any complaints about our rating systems, you can call us or you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. If you want to call us, you can, just like this guy did.
Hi, Ron, Josh, and Connor. This is Tim Slap. I've been reading Grant Morrison's Super God. And I feel like it's really changed me. It's changed how I look at the world, how I consider reality and fiction. I wanted to ask the podcast if you guys have read any comic books that have changed the way you look at the world. Love the show. Bye.
That's a powerful book right there.
Morrison would be proud, I think. I think that's exactly what he was going for.
The Bible's hoping for that all the time, but Grant Morrison...
It didn't change my worldview of superheroes.
He wants to know about the world, not just superheroes.
Yeah.
I think that Super Gods did change the way I look at certain books. You know, his analysis was, but that's because his analysis was really strong, and he's a really sort of penetrating look at the medium. But in terms of the world, it didn't change my worldview. Yeah. I don't know that any comics ever changed my worldview.
Or a book, has it changed your worldview?
Possibly. Probably more so, because books tend to be about real life things that are actually...
Yeah, no, I mean, books have changed my worldview. Super Gods didn't change my worldview, but, you know...
Books have. I could say, you know, I read the autobiography of Malcolm X or something like that when I was like 15. That probably made an impact.
Did it make you angry?
No, it's a great book. It's a really good book. Or what's the... To Kill a Mockingbird or something like that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no, you know, they're great works. I mean, I know it's cheesy and cliche, but you know, On the Road and The Fountainhead both left indelible impressions on me that changed my worldview.
I read stuff all the time that changes my view of storytelling.
Yeah,
or that shows me, you know, that really impresses me. Every time I read a Neal Stephenson book, I'm like, why can't all fiction be like this?
Yeah, he's good.
The world, I don't know.
All right, so if you have any questions, if you're looking for any guidance in your view of the world, you can call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We are here to help you.
I do not want the next round of emails. It's going to be complaints about our rating systems and then philosophical advice.
Yeah. So iFanboy Don't Miss is back on track. We teased it last week, and now it's back this Monday. Paul Montgomery is talking to some of our favorite creators, actually, some of my favorite after meeting them at Alternative Press Expo, Chris and Shane Houghton, the guys behind Reed Gunther. They're going to be talking about
They're adorable.
They are so nice and energetic, and just like, if you didn't see my interview with them on the video show, go back and watch it. They're just like good guys. They do a great comic book. Reed Gunther, Volume 1 trade paperback comes out this week, and Paul's talking to them about that. So definitely go to iFanboy.com and listen to iFanboy Don't Miss, or go to iTunes and subscribe to it, and don't miss Reed Gunther Volume 1.
Youth. Check out iFanboy.com. You can read my Pick of the Week review or all the other stuff that's going on
there. What
about
your Book of the Month review?
That will be up Monday.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Probably. Book of the Month will be coming up. As I point out the last time, I don't know why you keep giving me crap about this. I've never missed my Book of the Month deadline. First Monday of a given month. And all sorts of stuff going on there. You can go to ifanboy.com/about and you can see who we are and how to link to us on other ways on the internet. And you go to twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy to make sure you don't miss any of the content and the stuff that's coming up at ifanboy, because we throw it at you. It's coming constantly. Last week you saw part two of Night Court themed NYCC.
It's gone over really well. The Night Court intro, yeah.
That's one of the most fun ones. Yeah. It's caused me to change my rigor, and then next week is part three, our final show from God, that feels like it was a really long time ago, but it wasn't. A lot's happened since then. That's why, with a special guest star in the credits each week. Who will next week's be? I don't know.
I know.
Yeah. You take the content, and stuff it in your end zone. You can email us a contact at ifanboy.com, leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697, with any of the aforementioned questions about life or the way we review books or the way the star rating has changed your life, maybe.
Whoa.
That could be possible.
Yeah. And if the star rating has changed your life, you can go to iTunes and write a review and tell people about it. Or better yet, tell the world, tell your church, tell your school, tell your mates, tell your fellow patrons at the local watering hole. Spread the word. Become an evangelist of iFanboy. Help us help you in terms of getting your worldview back on track.
Tell your European podcast producer.
Yeah, exactly.
Say, mate. Do you enjoy stories? I do. Do you enjoy art? I do. Well, do you enjoy people talking about it in an entertaining and informative way? Well, yes, I do. And then you would
find
be like,
another show. Then,
bam. Not this episode.
Yeah.
No.
No. Not this. Not this one.
No. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh. Goodbye. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending,
which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.